Good afternoon, family. I'm Judith, and I'm a recovering addict.
And
I got to thank God for being here. I got to thank the CPR CNA 21 for asking me to come and speak on the topic, a cluttered spirit. You know, I'm humbled when anybody, anywhere, asks me to share my experience, strength, and hope. To the girl who was always told to get out and never come back. To hear the words, keep coming back, was like music to my ears. And so I'm humbled to be here today, because with this speaking, it's not just that I get in front of you and share my experience, strength, and hope on the topic. It's about the fact that I'm being trusted to carry a message of hope. It's about the fact that this is an incredible charge on my spirit. And I got to let you know that I believe in preparing for a topic. I believe in studying to show yourself approved. But for some reason, I just couldn't get it right in the studying. For some reason, I just couldn't get it all jotted down what I thought I could, would, or should say. And I got in touch with the fact that God is going to cause me today to go to a deeper level of honesty, like maybe I wasn't planning on doing. Like maybe through this sharing today, I'm going to get freed up in here and in the process, free some other people. And so I'm grateful to be here today. I'm grateful that Narcotics Anonymous found me when all I was trying to find was another way to die. Just to qualify myself, like a whole bunch of us in this room, I used drugs and used drugs and used drugs, and then at the end of the road, drugs used me. I'm talking about being caught up in a vicious cycle. I'm talking about the more I hit, the more I used, and the more I used, the more I hit. I'm talking about a real vicious cycle. I'm talking about going in a crack house in Camden, New Jersey, one day just being an experimenter. And before I left, I had crossed the line from being an experimenter to an addict. And the line was so thin, it was invisible. Didn't know what had come over me. Couldn't understand the concept of powerlessness. Because you see, I graduated summa cum laude from college. And I was my mother's smartest kids. So I was too strong and too smart to get hooked on drugs. A dope dealer boyfriend warned me when he walked in the house and saw me tampering with it. And he tried to smack that pipe out of my hand. And I grabbed the pipe back. He said, you're going to get hooked. And he said, you think you know everything. And I did think I knew everything. But it was only a minute before I realized I didn't know anything at all. Caught up in the grip. So I'm talking about after years and years of being able to safely smoke marijuana and alcohol, which I didn't even have any concept that I had a problem in that area. Because you see, I sold weed successfully for 10 years. So I wasn't in touch with the fact that I was a weed addict, because all of the things that crumbled later on with the crack addiction hadn't crumbled at this part. Because I sold it, I always still had a roof over my head. I was still able to function and show up for work. So I didn't think I had a problem. But like I said, when crack came into my life when I was 28 years old, all hell broke loose immediately. I'm talking about the fact that my career as being a weed seller ended quickly. Just to show you the progression, I would still go to Trenton, New Jersey, and I would still get the half a pound of weed, and I would put it in my trunk. And then when I ran out of my little bit of money, then I would go and I would start peddling it to the guys in exchange for rocks. And then it came the time when I stopped buying the weed. And then it came the times when I started getting broke within hours of payday. And you know what happened next? Once you get broke, then what do? Now it's time to steal. Now it's time to go to any lengths to get that hit. Having no regard for consequences. Knowing that you can get caught stealing somebody's credit card. Knowing you can get fired stealing money orders from Western Union. But caught up in the grip. When it came to showing up for my daughter, when it came to feeding my daughter, a hit won out every time. I'm talking about beginning to lose things almost immediately. I went to rehab about 4 months after, because I turned an addict real fast, because I'm an extremist. And I remember going into a rehab when I was 28 years old. And I remember learning more in those 28 days than I had learned in my whole 28 years of living. Because I was learning how to do something called getting honest with yourself for the first time ever. What a concept. Getting honest to the girl who grew up in the don't talk, don't touch, don't feel family environment. To whatever happens on Diamond Street, got to stay in the house on Diamond Street. So I cried a lot of tears, and there was a lot of freeing there. But as you know, the things that you keep inside are the things that would keep you sick. And I did not tell them that I had that drunken boyfriend waiting for me. Because they was going to tell me that I had to let him go. And I wasn't trying to let him go. That was one of the primary reasons I went to the rehab, so that we could salvage this relationship. And I'm going to talk about the toxic relationship piece a little later on. So needless to say, when I got out to rehab, I found myself in a situation. He was drunk in the middle of the street, and I'm trying to push him in his car out the middle of the street. Not only am I powerless over my addiction, but I'm powerless over people, places, and things. And before the end of the night was out, I was getting high again, doing what I do best, because I had not surrendered to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I had just temporarily got an oil change. Thought I had enough information, because they told me in a rehab, and they told me on the last day that my IQ was real high. And they didn't want to tell me until the last day, because they didn't want me to suffer from that brand new term that I had learned, grandiose. So when they told me on the last day that I had scored extremely high on my IQ, and they told me that if I had applied all of the information that I learned, that I might just stay clean, I was like, huh, I knew there wasn't nothing wrong with me. I knew all I needed was those 28 days. I can handle it. I can take it from here. But my life continued to spiral downwards. I'm talking about being so caught up in the grip that when I would go to take a hit, I would hear that inner voice tell me that if I took just one more hit, I would clock out of here. And I remember taking that one more hit anyway. That's how come I know there's a God. All evidence indicated that I should die. I was mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and all but physically dead. I was dead but too trifling to lay down. So afraid that if I took my own life, because that's what I wanted to do. Because remember, y'all, I had a daughter who was sitting around hoping and wishing that I would get my life together. And I knew I was never going to get my life together. And so I began wishing that I would die. I began saying, well, if I'm 6 foot under, at least she can stop hoping, wishing, and get on with her life. But the only reason I didn't take my life, to my knowledge, was because I said it would be just my luck that minutes after I'm dead, there'll be a knock on my door. And there'll be somebody coming over with a big hit, and I miss a high. And I wasn't about to have that happen. I wasn't about to miss no big high. So that was why I thought I didn't take my own life. But how about getting in touch with the fact that the real reason I didn't take my own life was because there was a God who sat high and looked low that said, you will live and not die, and you will declare my works. That's the reason why I didn't die. And the reason I didn't die isn't just for me. It's because of a purpose. And this topic is so appropriate for me. A cluttered spirit. And I was joking with my girlfriend. Yeah, I got to make sure that my room and my house in order before I go to Ocean City so I can share about how I don't have a cluttered spirit. In reality, knowing that it's deeper than the surface. Getting in touch with the fact that it's deeper than the surface. So the spiritual clutter. When I was out there in active addiction, it was the drugs. It was the needing that medication because I wasn't able to face life on life term. I needed to turn to dope in order to be able to cope. But what I want to talk about today is I want to talk about still in recovery with over 10 years clean, how there's still parts of me today that has a cluttered spirit. That's the thing that I want to talk about. That's the part that probably the reason why God wouldn't allow me to sit and flow and write. So that I can get honest, to free me, to free others. Because it's never about me. It's about me getting to the other side of my situations and circumstances so I can turn around and help another one get safely to the other side of their situation without getting high. So after many years of heartache and pain, after the geographic cure, moving from the Philadelphia, New Jersey area, and coming to Maryland, thinking that I could get clean here, but I brought me right with me. It was only a New York minute before I found the people, places, and things in Maryland that could get me high. Left the daughter in New Jersey. In denial, said I didn't abandon her because I left her with my sisters and my mother. But she was abandoned because, see, she already didn't know her father. So now she don't have a mother either. So now she's a motherless and a fatherless child. But she ain't abandoned. Saying that I left her there because that was what was best for her. When for real, she was just in the way. She was in the way of my getting high. I was tired of telling her to go upstairs and not peek. How many times we be in denial that our kids, you know, didn't know that we was getting high? When I'm out there on the floor geeking and peeking, they peeking over the banister at me anyway. It took a long time for me to get to the point where I was able to get and stay clean. I got clean in September of 92. Thought I would never take another hit again. But I had another boyfriend. And by the way, all of my boyfriends were all the same type of guy, even into recovery. It was the same guy, but a different name and a different suit. The same basic character traits. That was what I always attracted. And I would come into recovery talking about the no good man and talk about the toxic man and talk about the emotionally unavailable man. Until somebody pulled me up and said, hey, shorty, don't you know that you are as attractive, you know, that you are as healthy as the mate you attract? So having to get in touch with me, what was going on inside of me to still continually make these choices that I made in all my relationships, not just my relationships with men. So as I said, I went through a whole lot of heartache and pain, 22 months, had been clean for 22 months, picked up again because I didn't know how to let go of a daughter. My daughter was just causing me a lot of grief. She was filled with a lot of pain, a lot of anger, and a lot of resentment. And y'all kept telling me I had to let her go. But how do you tangibly do something that someone's telling you to do spiritually? How do you turn a child over to God? I didn't know how to do that. And of course, might I add that my control issues were still in full gear. So this concept of turning a child over, trusting a child to the God of my understanding, it was something I couldn't do. And the toxic boyfriend, I didn't even want him no more, but I didn't want to let him go because I didn't want nobody else to have him. Even though he wasn't worth having. Thank God that we have steps to deal with our insanity. Thank God that as a result of relapsing at 22 months, and by no stretch of the imagination do I blame the daughter or the boyfriend, what I'm saying is that I simply failed to make my own recovery my priority. And this is truly a progressive and chronic and fatal disease because having had 22 months, it took me 29 months to make it back. Now, you know, statistically, they say the longer you stay out there, the less your chances are of making it back. But I made it back. And I share all of the time that when I came back in these rooms, December 13, 1996, I didn't come in here running. I didn't come in here skipping. I didn't come in here jumping. I flew up into these rooms December 13, 1996. I flew up in here on a TWA. A thoroughly whipped ass. I'm talking about thoroughly whipped. I'm talking about sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired of me. Being willing to go to any lengths to change. Because y'all told me that the same Judith would use again. And I didn't want to smoke no crack no more. So I said, I got to be willing to surrender to this simple program called Narcotics Anonymous. This program that says that together we stay clean, but alone I'm going to get high every time. Left up to my own devices, I'm going to self-destruct. And so I wanted this real bad, y'all. So I began to surrender. And I began willing and able to do things that my sponsor told me. Like look up every word in the dictionary because she said, you're really not that smart. She said, and if it's not the word A, the, or that, I got you looking it up. I need you comprehending on a deeper level what we're dealing with here. This monster called addiction. I got a spiritual revelation at 4 months. And the revelation was that just maybe if I left my ego at the door and just maybe if I follow some simple instructions, whether or not I agreed with what she said, whether or not I thought I had the better way, but if I submitted, just maybe I could stay clean a day at a time. And I remember at 4 months wanting recovery and wanting to stay clean so bad that I became willing to let go of my know-it-allism. Because you see, submission isn't just when we do what the sponsor says and we agree or it makes sense. Submission is doing what the sponsor tells us, what our network tells us, when we don't agree, when we would bet money that our idea was the better way. But we do it anyway, out of a simple trust and faith. That is submission. And that was what was a critical tool that I had to learn in order to not get, but to stay clean. So here I am. Clean. But not serene. Because I got a lot of spiritual clutter going on. I'm working at the steps, but the full manifestation of the steps haven't taken root in my spirit. So I'm still acting out in many ways of it's like when I was still using. I'll never forget it, 6 months, 6 months clean. I acted out so bad in an incident with my daughter and another girl that my daughter snatched my pocketbook and emptied it out. She just knew there had to be a rock somewhere. Knew there had to be a rock somewhere. Toxic as I was behaving. So what I had to learn was to be patient and tolerant with myself. Yes, I've got spiritual clutter today, but thank God I also got the antidote. And the antidote is in the steps. The antidote for the act of addiction was step one. Admitting that I was powerless over my addiction, powerless over people, places, and things, powerless over going in a hit house and being able to get out safely, powerless over thinking that I could have a boyfriend that was using and buy him drugs that I wouldn't use or wouldn't want to use. So ridding myself of the spiritual clutter of using meant that I stopped using, that I put it down no matter what, that I went to a meeting, I said my prayer, I got a sponsor, and I did what she said and was willing to help someone else unconditionally with no strings attached. And the strings attached message is another message another day, because it was always a hook for anything that I did. But again, wasn't recovery so bad, being willing to do things differently. The antidote for the insanity, choosing unhealthy mates. Let me ask y'all something. How many of you in this room have ever been in a relationship that was less than what you deserved? How many? Oh, I think some of the rest of y'all might be in a little bit of denial. Being in relationships that were less than what I deserved, that was a big part of my story. Walking into a relationship, giving a man the loaf of my life, the loaf of my heart, and saying, oh, me? I'll just settle for crumbs because that was all that I thought that I was worth. But something happened along the way. As the step work began taking deep manifestation in my spirit, I began realizing that I deserved more than a crumb and I was greater than somebody's secret. I became willing to let go of relationships that weren't worth having. I began able to go to the man and say, I love you, but I got to let you go. Because I want this relationship with God more than I want this relationship with you. I want my relationship with myself more than I want this relationship with you. Being willing to sit still in relationships, even when I didn't want to. Being willing to say that I want a mate that's really worth having or none at all. Nothing in between will do anymore. Because after a while, I grew real weary of the in-between. I became real weary of the in-between. But it was a process. Because to undo the spiritual clutter, I had to do the step work. I had to take the journey to self-love that I love always sharing about. I'm talking about y'all told me that I had to learn to love myself if I wanted to stay clean. Not that I had to love myself, but I had to learn to love myself. Learning to love myself was a process. It was not an event. It didn't happen overnight, but I'd be doggone if it hasn't happened over time. I'm talking about the fact that y'all told me that I couldn't think myself into a new way of living, that I had to live myself into a new way of thinking. Y'all told me I had to do lovable things for myself even when I didn't feel like it. Y'all told me I had to get the nails done. Y'all told me I had to get the pedicures. Y'all told me I had to do the bubble baths in silence with candles. And I didn't want to do it. I was saying with my mouth that I wanted to love myself, but that was just too frightening. Fear, another spiritual clutter. But I wanted change more than I wanted to stay the same. And y'all have taught me in these rooms that when the pain of change, the pain of change becomes greater than the pain of staying the same, then I might just be willing to do something. And so the pain of staying the same outweighed the pain or the fear to change. And so I began willing to change. So I began getting the nails done. And I didn't start getting my nails done until I was well in my 40s. Because y'all know when I was out there in active addiction, I wasn't spending no $20 on no nails. That represented the cost of a rock. But in recovery, I became willing to do loving things for myself. And as I began getting the nails done and getting the pedicures done, it was suggested to me that I buy myself some roses. Now, y'all were taking it too far then. And I had the nerve to justify that I couldn't afford it. Now, at the time, I was working at a law firm in D.C., and the roses only cost $3 a half a dozen, but that wasn't the point. The point was, do you feel worthy enough to buy yourself some roses? Do you feel worthy? And I would walk past that rose shop and tell myself that I couldn't afford it, but then with my overeating self, I would go right into the breakfast shop and buy myself a $6 sandwich. But the program kept working on me. And one day I bought those roses. But I put them way back here. And everybody on the job was like, ooh, you got a man. Who bought you those roses? And this was at one of them spots where I had just let go of a relationship that really hurt. And I was able to say, no, no man bought me these roses. They came from me for me. And although I started out at the beginning of the day with the roses way back here, as the day progressed and as the people began to compliment me on the roses and as I could be able to smell their scent from afar, I kept pushing the roses closer and closer and closer. And by the end of the day, those roses was right up underneath my nose. And I began making that a practice, a self-love practice for myself, to buy myself roses a couple of times a week. And I became a connoisseur. I could look down into the rose and tell which ones were going to live the longest. And what began happening at this stage was that a love that I never knew that I could have of myself began burgeoning in my spirit. And then someone suggested I needed to go to a deeper level. And they said I needed to start writing myself love letters to myself for 40 days. Whoa. I'm talking about writing a letter to myself in the daytime at work, putting it in an envelope, putting a stamp on it, putting it in a mail to my home address, and then the next day, running to my mailbox like an eager little kid at Christmas to open up this love letter to me, from me. I'm here to report to y'all that it works. I use such loving, such endearing, such affectionate words with myself. I call myself Judykins and Babykins and Precious, and it's going to be all right. And don't worry about that relationship. Just know that whatever leaves your life makes room for something better. And I love you. Self-empowerment. And why this journey of self-love was necessary was because the more I could learn to love and accept myself, the less likely I would find myself continuing to be in those toxic relationships that was less than what I deserved. That's how on a daily basis, even today, how I've been able to free myself from the spiritual clutter of being in toxic, unhealthy relationships that are less than what you deserve. I've had to tell many a boss goodbye. They have thought that because they were hotshot attorneys making couple times over six and seven figures that they could talk to me any old way they wanted to. And I was like, oh no, you need to call the agency because I'm out of here, you know. And knowing that the job wasn't my source, that the job was only my resource, but that God was my source. I'm talking about some empowering stuff that we learn here in these rooms. Come on, baby. I want to talk about the fear. See, because before I started growing in this fellowship and in this program, I used to fear failure. But as I began to grow and knew that I had some gifts, knew that I had some talent, knew that I had some valuable things to share, I became afraid of being successful. Even the semblance of life frightened me. Because you see, being in the darkness was where I had hid out most of my life. And I became afraid. But through the step work, through the step six and seven, addressing that and asking God to remove the fear and let the courage come in, because y'all told me that courage is fear that has said her prayers. Courage doesn't mean that there's no fear. Courage means that even in the face of fear, I do it anyway. So I have learned and I am learning to do things afraid, because that's how I get to the other side. You can't go around it. You got to go through to get to the other side. And so today, when I come into situations where it would be fearful, it doesn't matter to me whether it's fearful. I'm like, okay, fear, I know you're going to come, but that's all right. I'm going to do it anyway. Because I always thought that the fear meant that I had to stop. But the fear means that if I apply some courage, because courage is fear to the set of prayers, I can do that thing anyway. I want to talk about the spiritual clutter of pain and disappointment. I want to talk about the fact that when you have an issue so deep inside of you and you don't deal with it, you know, like you go home and you smell something in the refrigerator and you don't clean it out because you're tired, and then you smell it the next day and it smells even worse, but you don't do anything about it because you got to make a phone call. But by the third day, you kind of, you know, sick and tired of that smell, and you have to go and you have to get to the root of what that is. Some things that have caused spiritual clutter in my life, even working the program, even filled with happiness and peace and joy, even not only getting to a certain point in my recovery where I'm able to help others along the way, even to the point where I become no longer a menace but a minister, even to the point that my bad days have no match for my good days, There's still things that can cause spiritual clutter. When you got someone in your life, like a child, who hasn't made it to the other side yet. I've learned the tools. I've learned how to let go of those that are not in recovery. I know that you cannot lead others to the light by going into darkness with them. And all of that good shit. But it hurts. It hurts to have a daughter. And I don't want to offend anybody in here, but it's about freeing me. About 5 years ago, my daughter told me that she had made the decision to live a gay lifestyle. I freaked out. I took it real personal, like it has something to do with me, and it didn't. I knew it wasn't about me, but I hadn't got there yet. Because after all of my years, see, the primary reason that I got clean, it wasn't for my daughter, it was for me. But as a result of my being clean, I wanted her to reap some of the rewards. And it wasn't even so much that she's living that lifestyle. It's about the gap that is put put between us. I represent light. That choice and some other choices that she made represents darkness. And as you know, light has no affiliation with darkness, and it hurts. And it's not even so much about the fact of her making the choice to be gay. It's that she's running around dressing up like a little boy. I didn't have a little boy. I had a little girl. I want her back. Spiritual clutter. But it's not an unaddressed spiritual clutter. Because I got a sponsor that I use. I got a sponsor that I can do some step work, that I can get to the root of that, that I can work on some acceptance, that I can know that acceptance is going to come, even if it ain't here today. But it's okay to share with a group that it hurts. But the good news, because she's also an active addiction, but the good news, talking about the message, being a message of hope and the promise of freedom, the good news is that when she's ready, and I'm believing that she's going to be ready one day to accept this program called recovery, that any addict, and when the literature talks about any addict, we're talking about any addict, black, any addict, white, any addict, gay, any addict, straight, any addict, rich, any addict, poor, any addict can stop using, can lose the desire to use, and can find a new way to live. That's what this program promises us. So no, her choices are not about me. I got to stay in the light to prove that there is a brighter way. I got to love my daughter unconditionally. I've learned, and I am learning how not to accept the lifestyle, but to still love her. How do we learn in this room? That you can hate the disease, but you gotta love the addict. I'm talking about being able to practice these principles in all our affairs. I'm talking about the fact that pain shared is pain lessened. I'm talking about somebody talked about the fact that there was a topic going on today talking about that the real hit is recovery. Well, I got another hit for you today. The hit is not only am I clean, not only am I at a convention, not only am I sharing, but it's my birthday today. It's my birthday today. And I thank God for the ability to be clean, sharing, kicking a message of hope, because that's all I got. Because the hope outweighs the despair. The light outweighs the dark. There is nothing going on in my life today that a drug is going to make better. And I'm in touch with that today. I'm in touch with the fact today that as the spiritual clutter manifests and reveals itself in me, that I have the choice. I have the God-given choice of whether or not I'm going to apply the steps and the traditions to them. And if I make that choice and I'm going to apply the steps and traditions to them, all is well. All is spiritually and fundamentally well, regardless of the surface appearance of things, regardless of how it looks on the outside. I'm so grateful to be alive today. I'm so glad that I'm spiritually refreshed. I'm so glad to be alive today. I'm so glad that God didn't let me take my own life. I just got to share with you that all of this living, it's not even about me. It's for a purpose. All of the pain, was for a purpose. I don't know if I'd be so compelled to do the work that we do today with those overcoming substance abuse and those that are homeless if I hadn't slid so far down the scale myself. I'm talking about the fact of used to have to sleep in abandoned cars and abandoned houses, sleeping with whoever, for whatever, whenever. And it's just not like that today. I've moved from homelessness to home ownership and helping other people along the way. Because you see, my clean time doesn't mean anything if I can't reach out and help another addict to get clean a day at a time. My car doesn't mean anything if I can't give somebody a ride. My homes don't mean anything if I can't offer someone a roof over their head or show them how they too can go from being a home, homeless, or having an apartment into buying a house. So everything that I do is not even about me. I just want to close with a poem, because I told you guys that God had given me a lot of gifts and talents, and one of the gifts and talents that I have is writing poetry. And I wrote a recovery poem, and the title of it is The Miracle in the Mirror, which is our theme. And in closing, it just goes, I looked in the mirror, and what did I see? A wide-eyed addict staring back at me. Hopeless, helpless, filled with despair. Hurting and lonely. No one cared. In the mirror, crying to God to save my life. Sick and tired of all of the drama and strife. Heart heavy and weary, paranoid and leery. Wanting out, but finding no open door. Caught up in the horror of addiction, each day enduring more. But thank God, somebody prayed for me at the end of each meeting, although I wasn't there. They prayed for the addict still suffering, that one day I'd sit in that empty chair. And then, because of prayer, and because of readiness, and because of a God bigger than life, out of the darkest pit of hell, I was thrust back on solid ground by a loving, caring God who turned my whole life around. Great things started happening overnight, no longer using drugs all day or filled with pain and fright. But by the grace of God, I had now surrendered, which is the key to freedom, regardless of race or gender. A miracle, the natural order of things had been reversed. Although all I deserved was to be transported in a hearse. A phenomenon, surviving all the odds, incredible, no longer having to nod. We are miracles because our past didn't win. We're miracles as we allow a new life to begin. Blessed with the gift of recovery, we're responsible to carry the message to all. Caring, loving, and sharing, united we stand, divided we fall. Once poor, now rich, once weak, now strong. It's our duty to help others along. And through the steps, we've grown closer to a God that before we never knew. One day our souls just opened up, and we were no longer blue. And now, replacing our deepest hole, recovery has taken over our total soul. And now, when looking in the mirror, what do I see? The miracle of life, love, and happiness smiling back at me. Thank you for letting me share.
Whoa. All right.
Thank you.
For our second speaker, we have Shep Two. Yes, sir, from the Bronx, New York.
Good evening, family. I'm an addict. My name is Shep.
Hey, Shep.
And I need to share with the group that I am real, real, real happy to be here. I need to say that. I'm real happy to be here. I can't express in words the happiness and the sincerity that I have on the inside for being here with y'all today. It can't adequately be explained in words, and I need to say that. And I like to thank God for guiding me down here and getting me down safe. When I got here, I was very, very warmly received. Yes. And there's nothing like a heartfelt hug that I received when I got here. And I really like to thank where I'm at. I would like to thank CPRCA21. For inviting me down here, you know what I'm saying? And before I start sharing about myself, I'd like to thank God for waking all of us up this morning. And with that, I'm truly, truly grateful, right? I got a topic, right? It's a beautiful topic, too, right? It's called the cluttered spirit. That's a good-ass topic. That's a beautiful topic, right? Because, see, my spirit, right, could be cluttered right now. You understand what I'm saying? But by the time I got to you guys, with me knowing how to learn and how to live with a solution, I'm going to be all right. Regardless of what comes down, what comes, what don't come, what happens, what don't happen. You understand what I'm saying? And one of the things that I really, really believe in is, right, because they theme, right, is miracle in the mirror. That's what they theme is. And I'm a strong believer that the addict can't really recover until he become willing to take a look at himself. And I really believe in the spiritual part of this disease, right? And I need to share with the group that I'm in touch with the fact that you can't fix a problem if you don't know where it's broke at. You can't fix it. You could do all the thinking you want. You can't fix it unless you know where it's broke at. So in order enough for my life to get better, I had to dig deep, 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 deep down in my past and find out what the fuck was wrong with me. And I'm an addict that believe in the literature. If you sitting in here and you knew, I want you to feel warm. And I want you to feel welcome. And I want you to know that this could be your new home. I'm talking about Narcotics Anonymous, or for a life for addicts, right? Is better than any life I have ever known. So our message is hope. And our promises is freedom from active addiction. That an addict, any addict, they could stop using drugs. They could lose the desire to use. And they could find a new way to live. But I had to find out a lot of things before I got to that point. So, I'm the type of addict, I don't even like sharing, right, without the disease concept. Because it be people be sitting in our meetings and they be new and they don't even know they suffering from the disease of addiction. They don't even know that, man. In our first chapter, right, in Who's an Addict, it talks about the things I want to talk about, right? And I'm sharing this for the newer member. It talks about it, right? It says addiction is a disease that involves more than the use of drugs. It says some of us believe that our disease was present long before the first time we used. Most of us did not consider ourselves addicted people before coming to the Narcotics Anonymous program. The information available to us came from misinformed people. Right? It says, as long as we could stop using for a while, we thought we was all right. We looked at the stopping and not the using. As our addiction progressed, we thought of stopping less and less. Only in desperation did we ask ourselves, could it be the drugs? Here's what I'm trying to get shared with the newer member, right? It says, we did not choose to become addicts. We suffer from a disease that expresses itself in ways that are antisocial and that makes detection, diagnosis, and treatment difficult. I'm talking about the diagnosis that I needed to know about a long time ago. You understand what I'm saying? I'm talking about me running around in treatment, trying to treat my disease, right? Running around in treatment for a disease that ain't never gonna heal. So one of the things that I got in touch with you guys when I first got with y'all is the spiritual part of this disease. I'm talking about, let me just back up a little bit, right? I come from the South Bronx, right? That's where I come from. I come from the South Bronx. I come from what you call projects, right? But there's a difference in the projects in other places as opposed to the projects where I come from. Where I come from, the buildings are 21 stories high, okay? And on every landing, on every floor, you have at least from 10 to 15 apartments on every floor. So that's a lot of people on one floor. And I'm sharing this to say, me growing up as a child, everything that we did in groups. Everything. You go to the store, you go to the store in a group. You go to the school, you go to school in a group. You go to the Sunday school, you go to Sunday school in a group. Right? You go to the park, you go to the park in a group. Right? So me learning how to deal with groups and learning how to do everything in a group, right, automatically determined me to carry this type of behavior, right? Like, I fuck you up. So, if you listening to me, right? If you listening to me, in order enough, right, for your spirit not to be cluttered, evidently your spirit has to be free. You understand what I'm saying? So I'm talking about how my spirit got cluttered way, way back as a child. My spirit started to get cluttered. Because the kids I ran with, you go to the store and somebody kick you, what you do? You kick them back. Right? You go to the store, somebody smack you, you smack them back. Right? And our literature talks about how we creatures are habit. And we vulnerable to our old ways. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sharing that to say, as I continue to grow up like that, right? My mind and my thinking became violent at a young age. And I'm talking about before the drugs. I ain't even get to the substance yet. So I remember, right? I'm telling you how my spirit started getting clogged at a young age, man. I remember my mother and father having this conversation, like I'm talking about, I can remember it like it was yesterday. I'm talking about right before my spirit started getting clogged up. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about remembering my mother telling my father, I don't want him to go outside. And my father was like, nah, you know, let him go outside. He want to be like the rest of the kids. He want to play just like the rest of the kids want to play. Let him. My mother was like, no. I don't want him to go outside by himself. Not him, right? And I remember that. And I remember my father saying, nah, listen. Look, little Shep, we going to let you go outside to play. But you know when you go outside, you know the street lights? Yeah, you know the street lights? When the street lights come on, you got 5 minutes to bring your ass upstairs. I'm here to share with y'all and share with y'all. For me, the street lights ain't never come on. They never came on for me. Listen to what I'm sharing to you, man. The street lights never came on for me until I reached the beautiful rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. That's when the streetlights came on for me. I'm talking about started using drugs at a real young age. Before I know it, started spending my life running around in jails and institutions at a young age. I'm talking about started using heroin at a young age. I'm talking about, before I know it, my whole life was being spent in institutions. I'm talking about Rackers Island, upstate, and then parole. That's how I start spending my life. Rackers Island, upstate, and then parole. A detox, shit. A detox or a program, that shit was just like a pit stop for me. That's all that was, a pit stop. Let me just stop in this detox. If I just stop in this detox, just maybe, I can have my urine clean before I get to parole. And that shit never happened for me. It never happened for me. I was always up in parole crying about, you don't understand me. Why y'all messing with me? Why y'all fucking with me, man? I have a job. I'm working. I'm not selling no more drugs, and I ain't committing no more crime. I'm working. And I would get simple answers, like Mr. Shepherd. Copping drugs is a crime. That would be the kind of answers that I get, right? So that's why my spirit stayed cluttered for a long time. You know, the sister shared about that too, talking about I know, because that was my theme. Anything you said to me, I know. 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 I, motherfucker, didn't I tell you I know? I know. So that was the thing, man, that just kept my spirit just trapped. I'm talking about suffering, man. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about by the time I reached the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, my drug use was over. I was suffering. I'm talking about self-pity, self-depression, self-despair, self-hatred, self-worth. I didn't know if I wanted to use or if I wanted to kill myself. I needed a sponsor. And I needed a sponsor bad. I needed a sponsor. Because I needed to learn how to unclog my spirit. I needed to learn about the disease that I live with. I'm talking about there's a destructive force that lives inside of me. And I needed to know about that. I needed to know that the disease of addiction is made up of a variety of mental obsessions and compulsion actions that ain't got nothing to do with drugs. Nothing, man. Nothing to do with drugs. So I needed to learn about that, man. I'm talking about... Physically, I needed to learn about physically, spiritual, and mental. I'm talking about the three parts of the disease. Physical, spiritual, and mental. So physically, every time I came home from an institution or jail, physically, I felt good when I came home. I was always strong. And I always worked out, so I always felt good and strong physically when I came home. But I never knew about the mental part of the disease. I never knew about the mental cravings. I never knew about the mental obsessions. I never knew that in the back of my mind, there was always something in the back of my mind that was going to bring me right back to heroin. I never knew about that. And in our literature, right, and it's Just for the Day, I think it's January 3rd, in the Just for the Day book, it talks about it. It says the most part that we damage while using was our spiritual condition. And all I had to do was think back to active addiction when I started doing my step work. All I had to do was think back to active addiction, because when I was active, I became dangerous. I'm talking about everything is for me. everything. This is for me, and this is mine. And give me yours too. I became dangerous, man. So in order for me to start, I'm talking about just to get in touch with how to start the internal work to unclog my spirit. I had to get in touch with the disease of addiction. I had to know that it's the first one that's going to start the deadly cycle. I had to know that I'm talking about just one. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just a little bit. I'm talking about finding out just a T90 bit. And I take the drugs, and I put the drugs in my system, and then my disease takes off. And then I spend the rest of my time finding ways and means to use, and then I use more. And the disease always told me, Shep, fuck them. You need one more extra. That's what you need, Shep. You need one more extra. Fuck your mother. And forget about your wife. And don't you even think about your children. And by the way, Shep, we ain't going upstate today. Just get up, go outside and get mines. We gotta use, man. So I had to get in touch with the fact that it's the first one that's going to start the deadly cycle. That's why it's that beautiful line in our very first. We got a beautiful, awesome first step. Because I told you, we talking about the disease of addiction. That's what we talking about. And there's a line in our first step right before it gets to the unmanageability. And it talks about how a second admission has to be made. Because, Shep, if you stop here, you're only going to know half the truth. And we great ones for manipulating the truth. We say on one hand, we can handle the drugs, but on the other hand, when I get my life together, I just might use again. So I had to find out all of that. And then I got a beautiful, loving, and caring sponsor. That's what kind of sponsor I got. But they use that trick ration on your ass. Yeah, that spooky spiritual shit. That's what they scared the shit out of me, man, when I was new. Yeah, they scared me, man, because it's a line in the first step, because my sponsor said, what are you thinking about, man? What's wrong with you? There's a line in the first step that tells us clear as day. It says, we saw that we had to completely change our old ways of thinking or go back to using, man. I said, damn, sponsor. So my sponsor said, what's wrong with you? What you thinking about, man? Didn't you know? Huh? Didn't you know that you couldn't think your way into a better way of life? Huh? What makes you think now that you clean that you could shop until you drop? What makes you think now that you clean that you can gamble your way into a better way of life? Huh? What makes you think now that you clean, Shep, that a new ride on the outside gonna make you feel good on the inside? Huh? What makes you think now that you clean that you could sex your way into serenity? Huh? What's wrong with you, Shep? We told you about all of these things, man. Don't be come running into the group holding us hostage talking about what everybody did to you. Because all we want to know and understand is what you, do you know what we going over here and with this step work process? Do you really know and understand what the first step is trying to tell you? Do you understand about, because you talk, it's only one way to really unclog your spirit. And I'm talking about the unmanageability. Yeah, yeah. Listen, you got two types of unmanageability. You got an inner unmanageability and an outer. And if I don't word it for word, it's in the first step in the flat book. You don't have to look far. It's on the first page. You don't got to look far. So if you're studying, right, they talk about the two types of unmanageability. I'm talking about learning how to unclog my spirit early in recovery, right? So you got an outward unmanageability and you got an inner unmanageability. And the basic text talks about the only thing that some of us realized was the unmanageability, right? That wasn't me. I ain't have nothing to fucking manage. Paying no fucking bills. I'll tell you how long I use. I ain't know nothing about that. So when we went over that, right? And we start talking about the outer unmanageability is not really all of that important for me, right? It's important, but it ain't as important as the inner unmanageability. You understand what I'm saying? Because the outward talking about, oh, do-de, do-do-do, I didn't pay my car note. Huh? Or I forgot to pay for my cell phone. Huh? Or I paid, my lights is turned off. Or you know I went to Macy's and spent the rent money. Huh? That's the outer unmanageability. I'm talking about the inside unmanageability is what's important to me to keep my eye on to learn how to unclog my spirit. I'm talking about the inner unmanageability. I'm talking about how I could wake up and just be angry. I'm talking about how I could feel discontent. I'm talking about how I could feel diseased up. I'm talking about why do I let people disturb me. I'm talking about why do I feel so alone at night sometimes. And my wife is laying right next to me. So the disease of addiction lives deep down in my spirit. It's a deep part of me. Right? There's a self-destructive behavior on the inside that cries for failure. So as long as I'm praying and meditating and learning how to maintain my spiritual condition, I don't have to worry about the outside unmanageability. I'm talking about an emotional state right now. I'm talking about the first result of prayer and meditation is emotional balance. Something I so desperately need. So I needed to learn about all of that stuff to help me unclog my spirit. And I need to share with the group. I told y'all how much I love y'all. Everything I learned came from y'all. I ain't did shit on my own since I've been here. Everything I learned come from y'all. I remember early in recovery, right? Going over a second step, because the second step is necessary if you want to achieve ongoing recovery. That's why they tell you in that step, you don't want to pass over this step with a minimum of concern. Only to find that the rest of the steps ain't going to work. Because you're talking about coming to believe. Don't worry about me, what you coming to believe in? Because my sponsor said, Shep, I don't want to hear all that shit you talking about, man. Did you help somebody today? Yeah. The more I think about myself, the more clogged my spirit become. Huh? The more I hold a group hostage talking about she made me this and she made me that and she did this to me and she did that to me, the more my spirit become clogged. The more I know and understand what my problem is during the second step and learning and understanding that when we talk about coming to believe, we talking about a brand new belief system, man. We ain't talking about that bullshit you talking, Shep. We ain't talking about none of that. We talking about we want to know what your newfound belief system is. That's why in the ending of the second step says, when our belief has grown.
We ready to take a giant step and move on to step three. And then I found out what really had my spirit unclogged during my third step decision. Because when you read the literature and you go through the literature, it talks about how our decision, this decision was not made for us by the drugs or the doctors or the family members or the judges. It said this decision was not made for us by the doctors or the lawyers or the judges. And I had to get honest with myself and really find out what had my spirit clogged up. Because I always believed on people, places, and things to meet my needs. Always depending on you to meet my needs. I ain't never made a decision for myself. And the truth hurts. I'm talking about until I got with y'all and learned how to make some healthier choices. And then later on I learned how to make healthier decisions. But prior to a third step, I ain't never made a healthy decision for myself. For many, many years, the judges made decisions for me. Well, Mr. Shepherd, you take this 5 years or we could give you probation. I'll take the probation. And for many, many, many years, right, my wife made decisions for me. And for many years, my beautiful mother made decisions for me. How am I going to make a decision for myself when the drugs is controlling my life? So I had to find out all of that stuff. I had to find out the things that kept me clogged. And I'm talking about cluttered, badly cluttered. I'm talking about being trapped in the triangle of self-obsession. I'm talking about my spirit will never be unclogged if I'm trapped in anger, resentment, and fear. It'll never get unclogged. And fear, right? I just want to touch on fear for a little. What page I was looking for? Shit. I want to share something with you, right? Because fear, right? Fear will keep, not only keep your spirit clogged, right? But it will keep your spirit dead. You will never be able to think straight once you let fear control your life. And I'm talking about all kinds of fear, right? Because you got fear of money, fear of what I don't have, what I do have, fear of what I'm going to get, what I ain't going to get, fear of the unknown, what's going to happen next. I'm talking about not letting fear paralyze me, man. I'm talking about fear of step work. My life can't get better without a solution. And then I'm talking about shit like fear of her. Shit. Yeah, I got a little time. Yeah, fear of her. Yeah, you scared. She home, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, she's home, man. She waiting for you. So what I found out about that, right? Because I got a little more time, but I don't have that much time, so I'm trying to say what I want to say real quick, right? Because what I found out about that would really keep my spirit clogged, right? Because I might still feel a little spiritual freedom until she get me mad. Don't you know control is impossible the moment it's suggested? Huh? So I found out, right? In the fourth step, it talks about how, I mean, we sort through the confusion and the contradictions in our life to find out who we really are. You know what I'm saying? And I looked at my patterns, my drives, I have a routine compulsive behavior. And I've carried the same fucking pattern. The same, it don't even take a turn, man. And our second step talks about insanity is defined as repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. What about when you know what the result gonna be? The same pattern. So in our fourth step talks about you want to get in touch, right, with your sexuality. That's one of the things that they want you to get in touch with, and it works out why. You want to get in touch with that. So if you're anything like me, when you go over that, my mind went to sex. That's what my mind went to, and my sponsor was like, nah, man, listen, man, we ain't getting down like that. We not in the streets no more, man. This thing go way deeper than sex. We talking about looking at your behavior, Shep. We talking about why you find out why you keep picking people that don't have your best interests at heart. That's what we talking about. And then I found out that that's what my problem is. I don't know how to pick them, man. I don't, man. I don't. Listen, man. You got to get in touch with yourself up in here. You got to write your own fourth step. Because I found out, like, some men, right? Some men like a real big fat woman, right? Some men like them slim and skinny. Some men like light-skinned women. Some men like dark-skinned women. Some men like long hair. I found out that all I go for is the look. She got that look. She could be a goddamn serial killer. But she got that look. So, if you're listening to me, I'm talking about the spiritual part of this thing, man. Because if I'd only picked you because of the way you look, that means I'm not attracted to your spirit. And when she disturbed me, it's a wrap. Because I can easily talk about how I love you. I love you, I love you, until you fucking do something to me. For real. Because see, I suffer with what you call chronic self-centeredness. That's what I suffer from. And it makes it doubly difficult for me to deal with you. Doubly difficult. So I got to be real careful with myself. And I don't care how long I've been here. I need supervision, and I need to be checked on. You can't run through recovery causing harm but for so long. Because you develop what we call a conscience. So, when I learn all of these things and learn how to unclog my spirit, just like I shared with y'all earlier, I can't do it without y'all. I told y'all how much I love y'all. I told y'all how vitally important the group is to me. Can't do it. And one of the things that I really love that I found out through y'all is how to move with the spirit. When you stay prayed up, you just know how to move with your spirit. You just know how to, it's just natural. It happens in an intuitive manner that can't adequately be explained in words. You just know. So. If you in recovery and you running around, right? Because spirit is contagious. So if you running around chasing the old gloomy and doomy, angry ass addict, that's your fault. That's your fault. Why you think the sponsorship pamphlet tells you? Find somebody that's reasonably happy. It tell you that. Because listen, I'm not lying. Look, if you sitting in here and you knew, right? May 22nd in the Just for the Day book, it talks about it. It says, just as the disease of addiction is evident by divine symptoms, it says, so is spiritual awakenings may manifest by serious obvious signs in a recovering addict. I got the time sign. I'm going to say this and shut up. Okay, thank you. There's a tremendous difference, man, and I'm not knocking nobody. I love everybody. There's a tremendous difference in abstinence and recovery, man. It's a difference. It says a recovering addict, all right? It says we may observe the tendency to think and act spontaneously. Right? The loss of the interest in judging the interactions of anyone else. It says we an unmistakably ability to enjoy each moment. That's a hard one. And we may break out with frequent and attacks of smiling. And here's what I'm sharing with the new member. It says, if we see someone exhibiting symptoms of a spiritual awakening, it says we should be aware that such awakenings is contagious. That's the literature. That's not me. It says our best course of action is to get close to these people. As we begin having frequent and overwhelming endorsements of gratitude and an increasing respectiveness to the love extended by our fellow members and an uncontrollable urge to return this love, we'll realize that we too have had a spiritual awakening. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share. Oh, this is yours.